Chapter 20. The True Story of Auschwitz-Birkenau. This could be considered a literary exercise in tolerance, if nothing else. But after reading so much negative historic content that most often lacks real credibility, I decided to approach this very touchy subject with a novel method. First of all, there are many unsubstantiated stories that may have some historic fact, but many say such things are not possible or likely. I am speaking of the reputed Zyklon B gas supposedly used in gas chambers. At Auschwitz, there may have been a facility that was used against Russian prisoners of war, or at least tested as such. But scientists say that it is doubtful that Zyklon B gas was used. History, including Wikipedia, make these claims as if proven fact, but fortunately they are not. There were proven gas chambers in the U.S. prison systems that were seldom used and became injection facilities, but the so-called gas chambers in German prison camps were found to be only bomb shelters, and when the war ended, and no traces of any gas were found, nor evidence of such. This brings us to the propagandized version of history. We must discount any first-hand accounts that cannot be substantiated, because these stories tend to become politicized after the fact, and that is a human trait that we all share. You'll recall the young girl that testified that Saudis were taking babies out of incubators and leaving them on the ground to die in the run-up to the takeover of Iraq by USA. She was coached in her lying diatribe, as have many survivors of all wars, and much of their testimony is well recorded and very convincing. Just because a young girl, a frail old man, or a sobbing woman tells you of their ordeal and vilifies a particular group does not mean that it actually happened in that way. Whole groups of societies will vilify the Russians, Germans, the Japanese as the bad people of the world, and at least in their particular war periods, but that is all Hollywood thinking, and in real life, you would love these very soldiers if you knew them, every one, and their parents did as their parents did, and they would be just like you and not inhumane monsters. Besides the little convincing things, like the interpretation of photos, and camp layout, and general practices, there are some very glaring points that cast doubt on the whole episode of Auschwitz. Without going into too much detail, I will outline a few of these major points. Do your own research on the web and see if they have some historic value. Many of the shopkeepers and landlords could have left Germany for a price of about $2 million. But those that could have provided the money refused because they felt that a sacrifice of blood would do them service in the future when the map of Europe was redrawn. Also, there are many distinct proofs that the war was funded on both sides by large banking industries, interests, I should say, and strictly staged for the benefit of the military-industrial complex. And the investors that were involved with both of them. Prior to that, Germany was being squeezed by World War I debts on all sides, and in the end felt surrounded by blockade. And that very problem led to places like Auschwitz-Birkenau. The money became volatile in German marks, and the government attempts at correcting the problem led to new problems. This eventually led to a general collapse of the economy, and everyone was left in the same boat without a currency. The war currency was probably US dollars or Swiss francs, and that went on arms and maintenance of the forces. So the general public got handouts of food and clothing but no currency, and the landlords, bankers, and shopkeepers were pressing the average German for money they didn't have and couldn't get. And it just got worse day after day. Repossessions only work in a society to a certain point. And once there is a loss of currency, there is also a general loss of martial law or control of the populace, and the empty buildings and apartments were reoccupied by default. How many empty apartments can a landlord control when there is needy people all around and the main thing on everyone's mind is finding food? With a distinct lack of martial law, because of both the shortage of funds and the fact that most young men were in the service, places like shops that carried valuables became a target, and their windows were broken and the owners threatened. They called the authorities for protection and wound up having to be transported away from their shops to places of safekeeping with other affluent members of society, such as the landlords. This happened over the wide expanse of Germany as the economy crumbled and many attempts were made to collect on the previously agreed mortgage, loan, and purchase contracts, but the money could not be forthcoming and all began to default. As the pressure increased, more and more incidents of minor revolt occurred and were referred to as goon squads, vandalism, and racism, but were nothing of the kind. The rule of law was breaking down, and a form of anarchy was taking place all over Germany, making it very unsafe for those that were not considered German blood. Collections and promises and new contracts worked for a while, but eventually it became clear that if you owed money for rent, it could not be collected, and you could not be moved out of your apartment because there was no one to enforce it. The so-called goon squads were simply German men that would not allow the landlords to collect their rents or move out the tenants, and the chancellery was not really in a position to mediate any of the claims since the court system was largely suspended due to war. The chancellery did not actually give any direct order that these things happen, nor did it even envision this event, but could only respond to the problem by placing the people in question in protective custody. Many of the quotes that seem to portray this sentiment of hatred or pre-planning against a specific part of German society have been misread, misinterpreted, or misquoted to vilify the oppressor, as any good story of war requires. In order to have enemies, to hate and kill them, even Hollywood style, it is required that they be portrayed as evil, and this goes double if you are sending a third-party soldier to a foreign front such as an American to Germany. The stories need not be true or even provable. They just have to be bad enough to make the troops want to hate them, and somehow this propaganda has remained and now resides in our history books, even though there is no proof whatsoever of such atrocities. The average German or American soldier is almost indistinguishable when one examines the moral footings of each. A German boy would no more go out and deliberately hurt an innocent individual unless he were in a situation where it was completely unavoidable, and even then he would do all within his power to do the right thing. This is not to say that there were no things in that war that were not shameful on both sides. War is like that. But no German boy has the upbringing at the time that would predispose him to wanting to begin his day with death and pain. Soldiers are people and tend to try to avoid all the messy and unpleasant tasks of war when it comes to holding prisoners. And when it comes to holding prisoners, are most humane indeed. One of the most convincing photo images that remain and requires a considerable explanation is the starving skeletal bodies found spread over the grounds after liberation. This would seem to point to German cruelty, as would the mass burial sites and the crematoriums. The war, as it wore on, produced a natural blockade, and the entire free population of Germany was starving. Farms were looted, and large-scale planting ceased because the crops could not survive the needy who raided them. Seeds and fertilizer were almost impossible to get, so it wasn't surprising that a group of people kept in protective confinement in wartime would not get the proper food they needed. These same skeletal bodies that did survive the war are simple proof that these were not death camps nor concentration camps, but simply a very low security holding area for those that could not function in a free society. And the German boys did their best to feed the group assigned them, but just could not get the supplies. Disease was rampant due to malnutrition, and the inmates were required to shower frequently, but the showers were not gas chambers as reported. War and mass graves go hand in hand. And it isn't surprising that many of these pictures survived the war, and it also isn't surprising that Germans took a lot of pictures because they had the best cameras in the world at the time. It is, however, a shame that so many of these pictures have been misinterpreted over the years and come to create the evil mystique of the German boy or man. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Germans have always had a high moral sense and are among the leaders in modern society of tolerance for others and fairness. Perhaps this is the weakness that led them to be a class of tenants and workers, and the underlying cause of the problem was this simple vulnerability. The crematoriums proved that there was a lot of death in Germany during the war, but does not prove any war crimes. The landlords, shopkeepers, and bankers were moved out of the populace and wound up in places like Auschwitz, where they were surrounded by barbed wire. Their colleagues in other countries knew full well of their existence and did not send aid or pay to have them transported out. They were sacrificed by their own kind, and the German boys did their best they could to feed them. The foregoing is a point-counterpoint discussion, and from this place in our history would be hard to prove either way, but I think my explanation sounds much more reasonable and likely than the horror stories that presently find credence. The true story of Auschwitz-Birkenau is about the criminals that financed the war from both sides. These are basically accountants, and those that are very good with money and have succeeded in subverting the various governments into this situation for the benefit of the very rich and powerful. These same people abandoned their own and had the temerity to try to forge history as some kind of Holocaust, which, of course, it was, but not as recorded, with the German people being the villains. Those that worship money as their god are the true evil of this event. And they let their brethren die of starvation in these unholy places, and that is what really happened. Now go and burn your history books. Namran Sor.